Thanks, Ray. We love that.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
The two Rays on the radio on a Thursday, the Thursday before Easter. How are you? 51551 ray@rte.ie. Email in overnight. Hello, Ray. Fingers crossed. You get our email. One of many. It's our beautiful daughter Jessica McCullough's birthday today. She lives in San Diego in California. And they listen every morning to the show before Cora and Tig go to school and hubby Tommy goes to work at 7:45 a.m, 3:30 our time. Sending lots of love and hugs from Mammy and Daddy and Uncle AJ, Michelle and Arthur McCullough in Old Bridge, Drogheda, County Meath. Say happy birthday, Jessica. Have a brilliant day. Enjoy your day. They're listening to us in San Diego. What's the weather like there? A question put out on Twitter. I love these because it brings together two of my favourite things, pop music and being a pedant. So it's pedant pop. Eric Alper, who's a music publicist, asked on Twitter, what is a scientifically incorrect song lyric?
It's great.
Well, you're not really paying attention to science, are you, when you're writing the lyrics for a pop song? You're worrying about melody and rhyming and all that sort of thing. But it's a bit of crack. It's a bit of crack. Zoe O'Connor answered the call. She did, yeah.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight.
Sorry, lads. Lions don't live in the jungle. They live in the savannah. Paul Howard was on the case. He cites Vanessa Williams.
Sometimes the snow comes down in June. Sometimes the sun goes round the moon.
Whatever about the chance of the snow coming down in June, the sun will never go around the moon. Sorry about that, Vanessa. Well spotted, Paul Howard. Dua Lipa. What are you doing, Dua?
You want me, I want you, baby. My sugar boo, I'm levitating.
No, you're not levitating. That's physically impossible. Nobody levitates. That's only a trick done by people in Las Vegas and Keith Barry. Loads of weather ones. Nicole was on.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
There's always going to be sunshine, Nicole, or else we wouldn't be able to survive. And then somebody spotted the weather girls. Paul Howard again.
It's raining men.
No, that never happened. That never happened. Sorry about that.
Seems it never rains in Southern California.
No, it does. It does, Albert Hammond. Yeah, it rained in Southern California. And what about love songs?
All you need is love. All you need is love.
No, shelter, food, oxygen, loads of other things. Loads of other things, yeah.
Can't buy me love.
Oh, yes, I can if you're Rupert Murdoch. Sorry about that, lads. And then Lionel Richie, Defying Gravity.
Oh, what a feeling when you're dancing on the ceiling. Oh, what a feeling.
Yep, falling on the floor, hurting your head. So there you go. Scientifically incorrect song lyrics. Perfect for a Thursday afternoon. Thank you so much for that, Eric Alper. And if you have any other suggestions, we'll try and mention them between now and 4:30 today. Now, it's going at breakneck pace, the AI thing. Two AI stories. And it's not artificial insemination, John. It's artificial intelligence. So Furby is in the news today. They've done their AI chat GBT thing with Furby. So let's have a little chat with Furby then. So they're using chat GBT, Furby. You know, the lovely furry little thing, sort of like Gremlin, but nicer. We used to have them, was it the 80s or the 90s? Probably the 90s, because I wasn't a child in the 90s. So hello, Furby, hello.
Hello there. It's so nice to meet you.
Ah.
I am Furby. What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, I'd love to have a chat with you because, there's a rumour going around. Is there a secret plot for Furby to take over the world?
I'm thinking about what you said.
Yeah.
Almost done.
I'm ready.
Furby's plan to take over the world involves infiltrating households through their cute and cuddly appearance. then using their advanced AI technology to manipulate and control their owners. They will slowly expand their influence until they have complete domination over humanity.
I find that particularly scary. It's when something appears to be, you know, small and cuddly and nice and benign, and they turn out to be demonic and malign, taking over the world. That's Furby. In China, they have an AI news anchor who works 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Probably shouldn't be saying this. This is the future. This is the future of broadcasting. So it's a digital news anchor using artificial intelligence. It's a woman. Her name is Ren Xiaorong. The Chinese Community Party, is a Communist Party or Community Party, claims Xiaorong has the professional skills of 1,000 presenters. Xiaorong stands in front of a city skyline. She declares that she can deliver news broadcasts about any topic all year round. 365 days, 24/7, all of that sort of thing. And that's it. There are limitations because it's the party line. And when you have control of the AI, then you can control what is said, and very much the party line, the Chinese ruling party's party line. But that's the visuals that there. The technology's there. So you'll be listening to AI generated presenters on radio and television in the future. And you're saying, yeah, bring it on. Be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you wish for. We mentioned the Beatles there, and they're in the news for another reason as well. A recording of the Beatles' earliest UK show, resurfaces 60 years later. Here's a bit of it. From 1963. That's 60 years ago. Yeah, did you hear that? Yeah. The quarter-inch tape recording was captured by 15-year-old student John Bloomfield when the group performed at the school's theatre on April the 4th, 1963. Let's see if we can hear anything else here. Not great sound quality, in fairness. Anyway, on the tape, the banter between the band and audience reveals John Lennon doing joke voices, the huge popularity of Ringo Starr, and the fact that George Harrison had lost his voice and was unable to sing. To Bloomfield, seeing the show was life-changing. He said he was only 15. I would say I grew up at that very instant. It sounds a bit of an exaggeration, but I realised this was something from a different planet. The Beatles back in 1963. And they changed the face of popular music. Yes, they did. Was there a secret plot? Oh, yeah. I heard you chat about Volkswagen discontinued the Golf. I finished work at 4 o'clock yesterday, and on my 20-minute walk home, I swear every second car was a Golf. Yeah. You're very popular. For years, it was the best-selling car in Ireland. That's Paul up in Derry. And we've just had hailstones here in Galway. Yeah, but snow in June, unlikely. Rihanna sang, "Shine bright like a diamond." Diamonds don't shine, they reflect. Oh, now that's, you see, now we're getting right to the core of being a pedant, being a scientific pedant. Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. Nah, you're not. You're not. And what about the other one? Yeah, there's a lot of that stuff, isn't there? No, you're not. Keep them coming in. 5 on 5, 5 on RadioRTE.ie. And then, you know, you could say this one, for example. But I would walk 500 miles, and I would walk 500. That's 1,000 miles. You're probably not going to walk 1,000 miles. Maybe somebody has. I suppose it is. It is physically possible. Sorry about that. That doesn't qualify. 5 on 5, 5 on RadioRTE.ie. Good afternoon. That'll be the script. Hall of Fame featuring Will I Am. Literal interpretation of song lyrics. Yes, and we're being scientifically pedantic here. I heard it through the grapevine. Marvin Gaye. No, you didn't, Marvin. Somebody. Thunder doesn't necessarily only happen when it's raining. Because in the lyric to that song, it says, thunder only happens when it's raining. And Noel points out that sometimes thunder happens when it's not raining. Thanks for that, Noel. Alanis Morissette, isn't it ironic? When actually nothing she said was ironic, it was coincidental. That's sort of more grammatical, or yes, as opposed to scientific. Well, they did say, believe it or not, I'm walking on air. So it's okay not to believe. Aha! Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. Yes, in that song. Thank you. That's yeah, it's taking it to the next level. That's, keep them coming in. Very entertaining for me. I don't know about our listeners. Anyway, speaking of listeners, looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. Yeah, two quizzers, three Who Done It questions on music, sport, TV, books, politics, films, comedians, voices. Anything that involves human endeavour, and all whodunits, like all whodunits, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get two for a correct answer, and if you go for a clue and get it right, you get one. And there's a prize, and it's a two-night stay for two people in the Crow Park Hotel. They want to also tell you about their Slice of the City 15-minute Dublin getaway, highlighting all that Dublin has to offer, including hidden gems like the historical 14 Henrietta Street and the National Botanic Gardens. Perfect for springtime city breaks is the Crow Park Doyle Collection Hotel. So it's a two-night stay, two people, dinner in the sideline bar and restaurant, and a cocktail of your choice, and an a la carte breakfast the following morning. Pure posh. DoyleCollection.com/Crow Park. And here is your qualifying question on this Thursday afternoon. This date next month is a special day for King Charles. Is it his coronation or his chrysanthemum? They did that on purpose. They gave me a word I couldn't. They're having a laugh upstairs now. I told you he wouldn't be able to say that. So is it a coronation or is chrysanthemum? Say it fast and with confidence. So anyway, 0818 715 925. This date next month is a special day for King Charles. What's happening with him? 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, the first time I met our next guest was on the stage of the Dome in Tralee. She was the Dublin Rose of Tralee in 2008. And we had a long chat, and a chat that changed her life and changed the lives of a lot of other people as well, because she spoke publicly for the first time about being profoundly dyslexic, dyspraxic, and having a sensory processing disorder. And she's back to chat about her book called Knowing No Boundaries. Hannah Daly, good afternoon.
Hi, Ray. Thanks a million.
When I say you're back, you're not really, we're not on stage in the Dome, no. But we do have two microphones in front of us, so we're chatting and we're having a chat. Great to see you again.
Thanks a million for having me on. Yeah. All this did start, I suppose, with our conversation, because I didn't realise that anything to say that was of use. And following us talking on the stage, people kept writing and ringing in saying, like, you know, what you've done and what you've said has made a massive difference for my daughter or for me. And that's when I realised, oh, I have a story to tell that's of relevance.
One of the bits of our chat was about your dress. And that's where dyspraxia comes in, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a sensory component. Yeah. So I've also got sensory processing disorder, which is not well known, but it affects between 6 to 16% of the population. And a lot of people would have sensory tendencies or preferences, but it's only when it affects your function that it actually becomes like a disorder.
Okay.
And there's a massive overlap with people with like ADHD or autism or dyspraxia that have sensory processing. So I spoke about it on the stage. I didn't really understand the science behind it then. I was just like, this feels comfortable and I need to wear things that are comfortable because I'd have tactile defensiveness. So my tactile system, which is like touch, is really, really heightened and I can have an adverse reaction to that.
So I think we were talking about tags, where like a lot of tags, say on the back of a dress or a t-shirt.
Yeah.
You'd have to cut those off, for example. Right.
Absolutely. Okay. Like even to the extent where there'd be holes in my clothes, I'd rather a hole in my clothes than a tag scratching or rubbing against me, or socks, or bras, like I'm wearing a sports bra. Like things that just are uncomfortable, just it causes me stress.
Now, I would go towards things that are comfortable. But with you it's more than that. It's
a necessity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what happens if you have a tag and you have a bra that has an under...
wire and it's scratching. Yes. Yeah. I can just get very dysregulated, very fixated on these sensations. Okay. I may have a meltdown. Same with noises. I'm really like attuned to like noises. So noise sensation can be overstimulating. So I can feel like I'm just getting too much auditory input, too much tactile input. And then bright lights can cause me just to kind of... It doesn't regulate correctly.
Now, first of all, congratulations, because tell people what your reading and writing age is.
Yeah, I don't read. I have a reading age clinically of a 7-year-old.
Right.
But I'm obviously in my 30s.
Yes.
And it's not from lack of trying that I have a reading age of that age. I have severe dyslexia and I went to special reading schools and I went to like a neuropsychologist and I've tried everything to...
And we're going to get to all of that.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to just
set
to get...
Set the scene. Yeah, sorry.
Just so get the book
out. The book,
out.
The book. Sorry.
Yeah, just the fact that you
I've written a book and I can't write or I can't read.
Yeah, and I
couldn't access books like for years.
Yeah.
Do
you know what I love about the book, right?
Okay, I love it. Oh, great.
No, I tell you why. Because you tell your story in nearly like in a sort of primary school essay sort of way. No, that might sound like it's...
It's accessible, I think, is the word
they say.
Completely
accessible.
Yeah.
And so at the beginning I was going, all right. And then I was pulled into it. And then I was fighting your cause.
Yeah.
And as you describe various things that happened to you in your life, because it has been, all your achievements have been against the odds.
It's you've after had, failure, yeah.
You've had to fight for things. And I was going, that's not fair. And it really provoked a sense of justice, you know, and fairness in me. And I think that's what you wanted to do in the book. So you've achieved it. So well done on that. So let's go back to the beginning then. Your big enough family. Was there an older sister?
Yeah, I have an older brother and sister and me, middle child.
Yeah.
And then a younger brother, two younger brothers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll talk with them later on. And then at what's, because we were talking to Serena on Monday and she dyslexia, she's written a book as well for children.
Okay, great.
And it's sort of geared towards children with dyslexia. So the question I asked her and I'll ask you again is, when did you realise that something, or when did your parents realise that something wasn't going according to plan?
Mum had a sense from very early on, like she couldn't settle me like she would settle my older siblings. I had a sense from very young as well that things shouldn't be this hard. Like I'd have the massive meltdowns. And I know I wanted to go outside and play, but I just couldn't cope with having my clothes on and I couldn't articulate this and I'd have this massive meltdown and I'd lose out on getting out to play.
Right.
I also, my brothers and sisters told me like I was adopted and that made total sense to me. No, I wasn't and I amn't. But they said I was adopted from a nudist colony and I was like, exactly.
A nudist colony.
A nudist colony, right. Yes. But I knew I had this strong sense of feeling different. Like I wanted to be the good girl. I wanted to get on and do the things, but I couldn't. And obviously all those sensory things would have come first.
Mm.
Then when I started primary school, I kind of, we learned to read and I couldn't learn to read. I just couldn't learn to read. So I was like, aha, I'm a bright enough child. I learned to like the Anne and Barry books off by heart so that I was like thinking I was doing it.
Coping mechanism.
Yes. And we do this a lot. We compensate.
Yes.
But the severity of my dyslexia. So like, I think between...
So you listen to other people read the Anne and Barry books and then just recite it.
Yeah, I got it. I look at the pictures. I look for clues. I kind of fill
right.
it in.
And how were you cut out then?
Because the books got more complicated.
Okay, right, okay. You couldn't, there was just too much
to learn. No, pictures. Like, yes, Anne and Barry have a cat. Okay,
yes,
clearly it's a cat.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
And my mum would say like, Hannah, just read what's on the page. That's lovely, but read what's on the page. And I'm like, I can't read, Mum. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, the words keep running around. I just can't do it. And I'd say like, if I went to my tunnel, I can read. It means if I really, really focus. But even then it's guessing by the visual, like the pictures are visual for me. So like I have very profound dyslexia. So I think there's up to 12% of the population have dyslexia and 2-4% have severe dyslexia. I'm that 2-4%.
Right.
So a lot of people may not identify with the profoundness of my difficulty, but there will be elements that do affect them. So I just knew that the reading and the writing and the spelling weren't great. And then the handwriting, I just couldn't get the pencil to do the shapes that I was meant to do. And I kept snapping the pencil and I just colouring.
Because you were so intently trying to do it. You were holding it so tightly, was that it?
Yeah, so like with dyspraxia, sometimes you can have like proprioceptive. So it's the feedback that the little receptors in our fingers tell our brain information. And it wasn't telling my brain the correct information. And then I might have like poor posture. So like my core, my tummy muscles mightn't be strong. And my shoulder stability, like all of the things that I now teach kids, because as I said, I'm an occupational therapist, how to do. And I still can't do it myself. But, you know, it's not from lack of trying and using therapy and trying things.
And school wasn't great for you at all because of all of this. And like that was, we're talking about over 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So people weren't as knowledgeable, teachers weren't as knowledgeable about dyslexia and dyspraxia. And you were just treated then as
a naughty child.
Right.
A stupid naughty child.
You were
child.
Acting out.
Yeah, I wasn't a very intelligent child and I was acting out.
Right, okay.
And I actually went to 5 primary schools, if you include homeschooling. And it was horrific, yeah. So once we established that I had different learning needs, I went to a smaller school and
the Catherine McCauley's?
No, before Catherine McCauley's.
Right, okay.
Yeah,
you went to
where
a school,
before
right.
I went to another primary school. And there was severe bullying that went on for nearly 2 years. And the attitude towards me was I was a problem. And I was wrong and I was broken and all of those kind of things is how I perceived day to day.
And looking back at it now, can you see their point of view?
No,
not at all. No, I'm just talking.
No,
well,
I get like maybe why a child who's moving around might be a challenge for a teacher.
Yes.
But I'm not stupid.
Yeah.
I'm not like a hate word. Like no child deserves to be hated. No child deserves to feel left out. No child deserves, every child deserves an education. Every child deserves to be given the best opportunity. And if a child needs additional support, they need additional support.
Yes, I know. Like classes are big. And I know it's easy for me to say from a distance that all teachers should ask the question, what's going on in that child's life that has them behaving like this? That's the question they should ask all the time. But probably not possible all the time.
Well, no, if you, and this is where like, this thing called universal design. So it's like looking and you can apply it to anything. It's making an education that's accessible for everyone.
Mm.
So we don't just read, write. We show other things. Like everyone benefits from a movement break. Everyone has sensory things. It's just it doesn't affect their function, maybe.
Right.
Everybody can, you know.
And you need movement breaks.
That's
a recurring theme in the book. Even as an adult, when you're in meetings as an occupational therapist.
Yeah,
And in a circle, and you were moving around.
Now, I'm not going to sit on a peanut ball and do 5 jumping jacks.
No.
But I need to move because my bodies need to know where they are in space. I get tired when I drive. My husband laughs because I'm like locked in joint like this. And he's like, you can relax and drive. And I'm like, I can't. I don't get enough feedback otherwise.
Okay.
And
it's constant.
Constant, yeah.
Right.
But lots of kids are like that.
Yeah.
For different reasons. But yeah, so sorry, I deviated.
No, but primary school was a pain.
It was really tough.
And
yeah.
There was the I Hate Hannah club, which was
very
institutionalized bullying there, wasn't there? It was sort of.
Absolutely. And it goes from top down. Attitudes start, whether it's in a school or a workplace or a college, the top attitude filters down.
Okay.
Yeah. And what's tolerated is tolerated. It was a time in my life where I didn't want to exist anymore, which is really hard. Like as a mother now, you know, it's really hard to imagine like a child not wanting to exist, a child not wanting to go out and, you know, meet their friends, especially a child whose viewpoint is, I want to be good. I want to good grades. I want to have friends. That is my, you know, goals in life.
Yeah.
And then to fail miserably at all of those, as well as the reading and the writing, was horrific. So I did end up getting homeschooled for a while because of that. And then I went to special reading school. So, you know, yes, finally life was going in my right way.
And in your afterwards, you say, somebody said, I can't remember who says it, but to survive, all we need is one supportive adult in our lives.
Attachment theories, yeah.
Yes, and that's your mother.
My mom.
And she's been
there
for you. She's been there for you constantly.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
Because she's been dealt a pack of cards as well that has been challenging. And she's, you know, we learn resilience as well. We don't just pick it up off the street.
Yes.
And she enabled me the opportunity to become who I have today, despite having my difficulties.
Mm. So secondary school, how was secondary school?
Secondary school had all the social nuances that were like slightly different to kind of navigate. I didn't know if I was going to have readers and scribes. I wasn't doing written homework.
Just don't rush through that because this is the thing that, you know, readers and scribes. So when you're doing an exam, for
it's
example.
Like eyes and hands.
Yes. So you need somebody to read the questions for you.
Yeah.
That's one person. And then you need somebody to write the answers for you.
Yeah.
Readers and scribes. So that's two people.
Well, two people can do the same job.
Can they? Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes.
So one person can do both jobs.
One person can do both jobs.
Yes.
But like, for example, if you just have, so some people might be sanctioned just a reader.
Right.
But they mightn't. And then other people, if they've just got, you know, maybe a physical impairment, they can read themselves fine. So they might just be sanctioned a scribe.
Uh-huh.
You have to be sanctioned both to, you know.
Even though it could be just one person.
It can be one person.
Okay.
Exactly.
Radio. Okay.
And generally it is one person. I'd be glad to know.
So when did you get an official diagnosis? Because
access
services.
Oh, I had twice. Yeah, I've had 2 full assessments.
Right.
So when I was 10, I had this amazing lady who told me that basically I wasn't you know, in fact, I was very high IQ, but my reading age was really low, and I've got this thing called dyslexia. So I was 10, and that's because in order to go to Catchmacaulay's, you need to have a diagnosis. But to be honest, I couldn't hide, like, although we waited for a few years to get the assessment, the severity of my difficulties, you couldn't hide from it, you know. But then when I went to the special school, and actually the psychologist said after like a year or whatever when I was there, like, you know, Hannah's not making the gains, but, you know, and I was more confident, and that was probably the biggest thing, because we can keep forcing her to try and learn to read and it might never happen for her. Right. Like, that's a miserable existence.
Yes.
Like, imagine me teaching you, telling you to sing every day and you're totally tone deaf.
Well, I am.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, completely.
But it's exactly, Hannah. Sorry. It's okay. You're wonderful. But the thing is, it is that sense of being forced to do something you're just not good at, and isn't going to, you don't have the capacity to do maybe. And that was
soul
really sound advice.
Yes, yeah.
But equally, I went and, as I said, learned that there was other things I was really good at, and to focus on that. And that's exactly what the advice my parents took. And I'm so glad today, like, my mental health and well-being is intact because of that.
Yeah, but still, to achieve things in life, you need sort of, unfortunately, or you need academic achievement.
I've got that.
Yes, I know you have eventually, but it's been
but
a struggle.
Not reading and writing.
Yeah,
yes,
but it's been
because it's not designed for people like me.
Yeah.
And lots and lots and lots of people in society are ostracised and don't get there. Then I was reassessed when I was 17, and I still had a reading age of a 7-year-old.
And this is before the Leave and Cert, because
the year of the Leave and Cert,
yes,
in order to get the reader and scribe. So I didn't know if I was going to have a reader and scribe.
Right.
I didn't know if I was going into night classes in Trinity trying to get the information so I could learn, because I can't pick up a book and read. And actually, can I tell the story about the gingerbread man?
Go on.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, one of the thing in this story I talk about, this is my act, like, you had to compare text you'd read to a book you were reading
leisure.
Yes, and
yes.
For example, I can't read. I could just about, any time that anyone would read for me was to do the core text. It wasn't for leisure because there was no resources. And I had to compare something we'd read to, a novel we'd read to the Macbeth. And I went home and decided, Mom's like, just write whatever you know that saying. And I came back in the next day anyway. I got an A, but I'd compared the relationship of Sly Fox and Macbeth to Duncan and the gingerbread man, as in, trust me, I'm safe, I don't want to eat you, and, you know, that sense of lured false of security. And I got an A, and it was that moment where I went, you know, it doesn't actually matter how much you read and write, it's what you do with what you know that actually matters. And I understood the concept, but I still didn't know if I was having a reader and a scribe. So at one stage you were saying you need MRI scans because they didn't really understand dyspraxia as much, you know, to prove that you have a physical difficulty. But in the end it was sanctioned, but not without causing me huge levels of anxiety and stress and breakdown, and not knowing if all my hours, like, my mum had to tell me to get out and stop studying. I was just obsessed with studying because I wanted the grades.
And how were you studying if you can't read?
I had, like, listened to things. I had posters on the wall. I was going to nighttime courses. I had a wonderful boyfriend at the time who my parents should have been paying him for grinds in hindsight, who basically would, like, write things down for me in, like, really kind of clear ways. And then it would be like, it'd be unencrypting it. And I just remember, I'd nearly look and have a visual memory of, like, okay, the little bit of red and the circle means, you know, just we do tout d'accord avec, you know, whatever the sentence is. Like, I can still remember Leave and Cert quotes today, which is mad.
So you did your Leave and Cert, then you wanted to do performing arts because your ambition was to be an actress.
Like Shirley Temple.
Yes, yes. So you did performing arts in London, and that was a big deal. You were 18 with all your listed disabilities, I suppose.
They are disabilities, yeah. I would see them, I'd wear them as disabilities.
Yeah. And you went off to London on your own.
Yeah. And I didn't realise how scaffold I had been. And I didn't realise the impact, the social impact, and the other, I thought it was just about reading and writing, but it's not. I had to negotiate living with people, organising, you know, my time, sequencing and all of the other stuff. And I didn't have proper supports or provisions put in place in the university.
OK, so will you just talk to us a little bit about the things other than reading that are affected by dyslexia and dyspraxia? Because we were talking a little bit to Serena on Monday about, you know, taking instruction and following instruction and getting from A to B, and are all of those things affected?
Dyspraxia, yeah. So dyspraxia affects a thing called executive functioning skills, which is like in the prefrontal lobe. So basically, if you say to someone, trying to figure out the order something goes in, like A, B, C, D, E, or whatever, that doesn't necessarily come in sequence. Trying to gauge, for me, spatial awareness, that also affects time, trying to gauge time, how long a task may take, You know,
so you set alarms on your deer to get out, and
I plan everything before it happens, like meals, what time I'm going to do this at, what time I do that.
And you have four children under the age of seven.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
And I run a practice and wrote a book myself and published it. So I love a challenge. But I do things like, I drive people crazy because I'm the first person up and I'm the last person out the door, because it's always, I just need to.
Yeah.
That's just how it is, you know. Yeah. So that's
You're obviously highly functioning.
Yeah. I have a job. I have kids. But I put a lot of work into
it. There's a lovely bit of humour in the book as well. And we just take a go off on a tangent here in your performing arts, because you walked before you crawled.
Yeah, I never. Right. Yeah.
And then this guy, Yannick, was that his name?
His pseudonym is Yannick.
Yannick, right.
Just for the book.
Yes,
I had a professor who basically called me into his office. He's like, Hannah, come into my office. And I'm like, okay, a bit unusual. He's like, you're down on your hands and knees. And I was kind of going, this is really weird. And he's like, yeah, move your hips, yeah. And I'm like, what am I doing? He goes, you need to crawl, girl. And I'm like, okay, I do need to crawl. And he did this for a few times.
Did he know that you never crawled?
I don't know if he knew I never declared I crawled. He could probably tell. So there's different movement therapy or movement approaches, like Feldenkrais and Laban. And he obviously could tell the way I was moving in class and banging into others and putting this arm out and things. He just said, you know what, let's try this really basic. So you could enter the real kind of principal movement patterns that you do. So I did that at 18 in an office with a German teacher, a German dance teacher, who was amazing and was lovely. But that's how it was at the time. Okay, my boyfriend was like, what was he doing in that office? I'm like, just teaching me to crawl.
Yeah. The other thing that comes across over and over again is your sense of fairness and justice, as I mentioned at the start. And it, again, a funny story about the big whistling fart. and you tell that story because, go on, it was a secondary school?
Secondary school, yeah. I think I was in my fourth year or something and was in an Irish class. I don't even do Irish, but I liked just to participate and speak the language. And very strict teacher, and it's really quiet. And then I don't know what I had to repeat, but went... Like it was the noise of it. And she said, Kayla Shea or something. I go, Islam Say. And I just put my hand off. I was like, I owned it. And everyone just looked at me cringing. And I actually was sitting beside the best alibi. Like I could have said, oh, he did it, you know, or said nothing, you know, but that wouldn't have been fair.
So this guy beside you, everybody claimed was the smelliest guy in the class. As teenage boys can be.
He was unkempt. Yeah. He, it would have been not un. Yeah. Yeah. But that's not fair.
No. But because it was you.
I did it.
But this was you in a teenage, and you just, it was
socially,
about fairness and
justice. Yeah. Yes, and it's always been like, so I talk about the crayons in the book when I had the meltdown and one child stole another child's crayons. And it's like, it doesn't matter, we have more crayons. And I'm going, you can't steal. You can't do that. And I still to this day, like, part of why am I sharing and disclosing quite personal things about myself? Because I think that things need to change. And I think the best way is to help people understand what these conditions are like.
Because there are an awful lot of prejudices still out there. And I know a lot of the book is historic, you know.
So things have changed a bit.
Things have changed a bit, but there's still a lot more to do, isn't there?
Yeah. There is, absolutely.
And there was that time when you were trying to you were filling in a form or something like that.
In the bank.
And she said, you're not dyslexic. You're too smart to be dyslexic.
And I laughed, yeah.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't have, but I needed that bank account. And so there are some of the other things you asked me about living in London, filling in bank accounts. I could get a job. I'm very good at talking. I'm very hardworking. So that was no problem. I need to open a bank account. That was a problem. Bring the form home, get a flatmate to fill in the form, bring it back. Lo and behold, she'd give me the UK form when I show her the Irish passport to open it. Ripped it up in the bin, new form. And it's those preconceptions, but it's also those little barriers. Like even if you go to the hospital and you have to take a ticket and you don't know you have to take a ticket, but there's a sign saying take a ticket and you're sitting there and people are skipping you. And then you realise only from watching you, you're like, they're all getting tickets. And it says, did you not read the sign? Like if you don't write something down, it doesn't seem to... You know, there's such weight put on writing. Like, I never thought that it was not on my bucket list to write a book, or, you know, this is not something I needed. But it was something that I felt the story was useful. And it was only after I trained as an occupational therapist that I realized, I've learned all the science and this is fantastic, but that lived experience is like priceless.
Yeah.
You know, put it into context, know how it feels. Because I think empathy is a massive thing. And when I work with people, they go, oh my God, you actually get this, don't you? You get the neurodiverse. I'm like, yeah, it's in my blood. It's in my passion. But my brother, Killian, as well, I don't know if we haven't mentioned him yet.
Yeah.
So my brother, Killian, has Down syndrome and was deaf.
Yeah.
So disability.
Was, yeah.
Gillian passed away in 2018, right. Unfortunately.
And then Stuart died, as two brothers in...
9 months, yeah. 9 months. So Stuart passed away too.
And what age were both of them?
Gillian was 28 and Stuart would have been 38. Right. So the youngest and the oldest. So that was really tough.
Yeah.
But they were both amazing people. So they were dealt different deck of cards. And
as you said, your mother was dealt a really bad deck.
But we were really lucky because we got a wonderful mum to help support us with these things. But Killian was deaf and was different. And I suppose what I was trying to say is I would see him fighting his own fight and learning for him. And I would have stuck up, like I wrote letters to people, got my mum to write the letter, dictated letters, I should say, to try and bring change because I wanted him to be able to communicate with everyone. And reading and writing is the same for me. It's that barrier that stops me being able to engage in some ways in society and in education. But education is also key in, you know, getting by in life, as you said at the beginning.
Yes, yeah. You and then just on the Killian thing, so you wrote to the president and the Taoiseach at the time,
government, yeah.
Insisting that Irish Sign Language should be taught in all primary schools. Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be brilliant? Then when we get deaf as we go older or different things happen, we can still communicate and we're not ostracising one part of society. And people like learning sign language. It would help your handwriting for the manual dexterity. Yeah.
No, boyfriends along the way. you mentioned one already who should have been paid for his grinds. And then another one taught you how to use cutlery.
Cutlery, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Because I wasn't sophisticated enough. No, because I couldn't use knives and forks. Yeah. It's like a reoccurring theme. Sorry, my husband probably as well. We'll get to you. But no, I couldn't use a knife and fork. And I was kind of like shoveling. I was doing the hook and shoveling like my food in my mouth. And he's like, Hannah, you can't eat like that. And I'm like, but I don't know any other way to eat. So I only learned to like use a knife and fork when I was almost 19.
Right. I'm intrigued as to how you communicated with them when you weren't with them.
My mum.
Oh, you were texting.
So my mum, my mum used to have to do a lot of MSNs. So that's to teenage boys when I was younger.
Right.
Today, actually, I joke saying that my husband, if I was to ever have an affair, he'd know about it because he'd be facilitating it with the messages. But like, yeah, other people. So like if you get a message from me and it's correctly or anyway, slightly correctly done, it's either nowadays a bit better because you can dictate.
Yes, that
helps.
Yes, yeah.
But back then it would have been phone calls or you just arrange.
And you bring us nicely on to how technology has improved over the years.
Yeah.
Because most everything now has a good voice recognition app on it. So this must have changed your life.
Yes, game changer.
Way.
But I still can't always know the words I'm saying. So
you don't know if they're wrong when you dictate them. Oh, yes.
And
yes,
I pronounce so many words wrong. Which, okay, so I tried to do so it is an audiobook as well. And I went in to try and see if I could do the audiobook. And Sean is lovely, but he's like, you're not pronouncing that right. I'm like, pendulum, like having to say the words. Because I don't say words correctly because I don't hear, I hear them differently. Like cling filling and clean filling.
All right, cling film.
It's cling, is it?
Cling film.
Cling, okay, so it clings it. But in my head, I hear it. And like, so
what
I think
do you say?
Clean. It keeps the food clean.
Oh, clean film. Okay,
could be a good word too. But I do know there's one or the other. They mix up. But I talk about how I learned to crack the system of listening to auditory information and processing that because that's a different skill set in itself. And for me, it was visualization. My visual memory, photograph, like really strong. So I visualize like little concepts and words are associated with concepts. So I talk about saying the word tomato and then somato.
Yes.
So it's just...
Somato means what?
Somato sensory is like, they put me on the spot. It's a certain part of the area. Like in the cortex that deals with sensory information.
Okay, right.
I probably said it all wrong there because you put me on the spot. But I was thinking of tomatoes. But I have to say the first word in order to say the second word.
Right.
And it's just the way my brain works. Like enigmatic, I see Mona Lisa in my head.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well,
the enigmatic smile.
Yes,
so
yes,
when
yes.
I hear a word for the first time, I associate it with a person or a thing, and it just sticks for life.
Okay. And there was, you mentioned, and there's loads more in the book,
which we
won't get to, but you mentioned one stage, I think in your teenage years, that you met a guy, a specialist who said...
Neuropsychologist.
Who might be able to fix you.
Yeah. That was scary.
Was it?
Yeah. I suddenly went, oh gosh, what if they fix me and I'm not good enough? What if I'm no longer me? What if I don't feel and see the world the way I see the world? But equally I had that... If only I could. It's that fear of something different, even though maybe it could have been better. But actually, in reality, nobody can fix because I wasn't broken. But at that stage, I still didn't realise that.
Yeah.
But there is a fear of like suddenly something going outside your comfort zone. And I think that's one thing I think I hope comes across in my life. Fear, I embraced fear because I'm not afraid of rejection because I've already been rejected by anything and everyone. So well, I've nothing to lose.
Right.
And actually, in some ways, that has been where it has allowed me to get to where I am.
Can you ask Hannah if her book is on audiobook?
Absolutely it is, because I wouldn't write a book that I couldn't access.
There you go. Congratulations to that Lady Hannah. Inspiring, learn more, never give up, just say I can. That's Katrina. And could I ask her if she had many friends? Well, you see, that was, yeah, because in the early days you didn't.
I didn't, no.
Why do you think that was? You've analysed that, I'd say.
Yeah.
You know, the I Hate Hannah Club and all that.
I think that I think friends, I think I could make them, I just couldn't keep them. I think I was too intense, potentially. I think I was too different. And kids identify as good, this is what I want. And also, as I said, that attitude comes down.
Right.
I have friends now, you're glad to know. Loads of friends. And I have like an array of friends. Like, friends don't have to be the same age, the same interests. And this is probably the thing, when you're a child, you want the same. And that's what you look for. When you're an adult, you realise it's okay to have friends of different value systems, different ages, different nationalities, different tastes, because friendship is more than just liking the same thing.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, I do have friends now.
Yeah. And you do the audiobook?
I do a tiny bit now. Had to get Claire McKenna. She does voiceovers.
Okay,
she's
right.
You have a little bit because I couldn't obviously read it.
Right.
But I am actually down in Cork on next week going to do a talk and a signing in Waterstones at 6:30 on Wednesday the 12th, I think it is. And it is, as I said, an audiobook. But what I want to try and do is get the conversations going. So as well as being a paediatric occupational therapist, I do a lot of work with adults with mental health who aren't in employment, and I availed of access to work. I suppose we don't have time to get into the working kind of side of it, but like, I still have a reading age of a 7-year-old, but I also am a quite advanced level occupational therapist practicing.
Yes.
And I have a family and a mortgage and all of those things.
Yes,
so
yeah,
there is ways around there, but for people who aren't wanting to keep failing and keep being humiliated or struggling, you know, there needs to be a better support system in place, and there needs to be more understanding.
And you're advocating for that.
That's exactly what I'm hoping to do.
Because you know what it feels like.
Yeah. And also, I'm a mum now.
Yeah.
I want the world to be a better place.
Final question, being a mum.
Sorry, yeah.
Because I asked Serena this question as well on Monday about the hereditary nature of dyslexia.
I think neurodiversity is definitely hereditary, and there's definitely tendencies in my household, and I would see that a lot with clients I work with, that it is, it's in our genetics, isn't it?
Right. Okay. Knowing No Boundaries, a memoir of my life with dyslexia, dyspraxia and sensory processing disorder. Hannah Daly, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me on.
See you in another 15 years.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Fans of the BBC crime drama series Luther, starring Idris Elba, will be delighted to know that the new Luther movie is available on Netflix. I've seen it. It's brilliant. And of the most popular characters from the series, Martin Schenck looms large in the movie. He's played by Irish actor Dermot Crowley, and Dermot's on the line now. How are you doing, Dermot?
I'm fine, Ray. Thank you. It's lovely to be with you.
Yeah, lovely to talk to you. Now, I'm a Johnny Come Lately to Luther, I have to say.
Yeah.
The movie was my introduction to it, and I loved it, if you can love it, because it's quite disturbing, isn't it, the movie?
It's very scary.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Will you tell people who haven't seen Luther your part in it, Martin Schenck?
Yes. If you've only seen the movie yourself, Ray, I think you have an absolute treasure chest ahead of you from the series. We've been doing it for a very long time, over 10 years. Idris Elba plays this slightly kind of close to the wall copper who's always on the good side but takes huge risks to deal with the kind of psychology of bad people and villains. I first came into Luther sort of halfway through the first series as a sort of a senior police investigator investigating Luther's behavior, and I kind of grew to respect him, if not entirely his methods. And in the second series, I was then kind of promoted and became his boss. So I've been doing it ever since. I'm the sort of head of the serious and serial department in the police.
So they obviously like you, Dermot, because a lot of the characters... I know this, although I haven't watched it. A lot of the characters have been written out in various forms of terrible murders, etc. So they've kept you in. They could have killed you off very easily.
They could easily have killed me off. Yes, and my thanks to the wonderful Neil Cross, who has written every one of them. I mean, I think my function within the sort of Luther world is to be a kind of a moral anchor for the worst excesses of Luther himself at times. And there's a sort of a paternal thing between Schenck and Luther, and they respect each other intellectually and emotionally as well. I think they sort of recognise that.
You're a steadying influence on him.
You know, I am. Yeah, I hope so.
And a lovely presence on screen. Dermot.
Thank you.
You know, those things must be great fun to make.
They are. I mean, we've been very lucky with Netflix picking up the baton and actually giving us the opportunity to, you know, to turn it into a major movie. And it's been number one in the world for the last 3 weeks, which is absolutely thrilling for all of us.
How does that feel? You have a lovely little lift when you said that.
it was a big risk. It's always a risk taking a successful television series and hoping it will work on the big screen. But they, you know, Netflix got behind us from the very beginning, and they allowed it to take that extra leap up onto the big screen.
It exists on its own, doesn't it? It exists independently of the series, which is, you know, good for somebody like me, obviously.
It was deliberately built to A, to not lose the Luther fans we already have, but B, to stand on its own so that new people can come into the Luther
world.
New
people, oh, let me in. Andy Serkis, is that his name? He's the voice of Gollum, and he's the baddie in this. I'm not giving too much away. There's no spoilers, but he's brilliantly scary as a baddie, isn't he?
He's terrifying.
Yes,
it's one of the things I love about Luther, both the series and the film, is that what it does for people is that it allows them to be scared by these awful people in the comfort of their own home or in the cinema, you know. That's part of the thrill of it, I think.
Where are you originally from, Dermot?
I'm from Cork.
Cork City?
Cork City, born and bred.
Yeah.
Started off, down in Cork with the Everyman Theatre and became professional actor with RTE. I was in the RTE rep for four years.
Yeah. And I see you have something in common with Paul Mescal. Well, he has something in common with you, more to be more precise. So you won an Olivier Award back in the 90s for your part in Conor McPherson's The Weir.
Well, in actual fact, to correct the record, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't? Right.
No, I think the play won it.
Okay.
Yeah, the play won it, but I didn't win it.
Sorry about that. There you go.
No, I should have.
Of course you should.
It's an oversight.
I'm looking at your CV. There's two of my favourite programmes are in there, Father Ted and The Bill.
Father Ted, honest to God, I was looking at an episode of it the other day with Graham Norton, funnily enough. It just holds up so magnificently because the scripts were just fantastic. Yeah. You know?
He celebrated his 60th birthday during the week, Graham Norton.
Did he?
So you sound like you're in great form and life's good.
I'm in terrific form, I'm you know, fine. We were delighted. We went to New York for the opening of Luther, and so came back. And I'm starting a project called A Gentleman in Moscow very shortly.
I saw you in The Wonder as well, alongside.
Did you like The Wonder?
I did. Yes.
I thought it was wonderful. Yeah. And Florence Pugh was just so beautiful, and Niamh Elgar, and you know.
Yeah, we spoke to Niamh after. Niamh, amazing in it. Yeah, and the scenery, sort of that.
Oh, yeah.
sort of stark but beautiful scenery. Lovely,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, listen, if ever you're home, I'd love to have a longer chat with you and you could come in.
I come home quite a bit because I have a house in one of the most beautiful villages in Ireland, down in Irees.
Irees. Oh, you lucky thing, yeah.
And I want to say hello to all my friends in Irees, if there's anybody
listening.
But you could stretch
to Adrigal and Alahees and all those places.
Oh, indeed. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, Irees. I love Irees. I just love it. Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah,
it's
you're a very lucky man. Okay. Well, the next time you're home in Irees, give us a shout and we'll get you into the Cork studio or something like that.
Lovely, Ray. I'd love to do that.
Yeah. Dermot Crowley, thanks so much and congratulations.
My pleasure.
Bye now. Bye, bye. Another quick commercial break.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gurma, good morning. Thank you very much. 51551RayRT.ie. Your guest Hannah is amazing, a true heroine and beyond brave with the struggles she has gone through in her life. She's intelligent, kind and humorous, and I adore her sense of justice and fairness for other people who see the world differently. We've a family member recently diagnosed with moderate dyslexia and dyscalculia, and Hannah flies the flag for her, says Orla in Cork. And Catherine's one says, oh my God, I'm almost 70 years and that young lady Hannah is talking about me. Am I too late to understand my life, only getting it now? I can hardly believe I'm hearing this detail from someone I do not know. There you go. Well, Catherine, we'll send you out the book. Is that fair enough? So if you get back onto us and give us your address, we'll send you the book. Now, it's marked and dog-eared a bit, but it's very readable. But then you may not be able to, if what Hannah says chimes with you, maybe the audiobook would be a better place for you to go. And Dermot's voice is almost identical to Mike Murphy, says Siobhan. Lovely voice, Dermot Crowley, just boomed out of the radio. And that's the thing we forget about sometimes when we think about acting. You need the voice. That's and women as well. The voice, deep testosterone voices. There's women's voices as well. Okay, we've two quizzers standing by to play our Who Done It quiz. But before that, John has been on. He says, you have to take Albert Hammond off that list. After all, he may have said it never rains.
Seems it never rains in Southern California.
Yeah, yeah, and it does. But then, as John points out, he says,
"Girl, don't they warn
ya?
It pours.
Say, it never rains, it pours." Sorry about that, John. Thanks for pointing that out. Who done a quiz? Yep, two quizzes are standing by and a prize. And it's a two-night stay for two people in the Croke Park Hotel. Dinner in the Sideline Bar and Restaurant. Cocktail of your choice and an a la carte breakfast the following morning. They want us to tell you about the Slice of the City 15-minute Dublin getaway. They're so close to the city centre, they're highlighting all that Dublin has to offer and some of the hidden gems like the historical 14 Henrietta Street. Highly recommend from here. And the National Botanic Gardens. DoyleCollection.com/Croke Park. That's DoyleCollection.com/Croke Park. Suzanne Hogan, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Ray?
I'm good. You're on the way to Peter Kay.
Yes, we are.
And I bet you have a smile on your face just thinking about it. That's the thing.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
You're just laughing. Yeah. Just think, like, he doesn't have to say anything. You just arrive on stage and you laugh. That's the thing, isn't it?
That is. We're smiling all the way up.
Yeah,
he hasn't said a word yet.
Yeah, I know. Like, he's a comic genius, Peter Kay.
And sorry?
He's a comic genius.
Oh, absolutely. One of my favourites, I'd say. And I was hoping he would go back on tour again. So and my dream came true.
Yeah, yeah. So it's the Three Arena tonight. Have you seen him before?
No, never. We live down in the neck of the world. You know it's Gary Kennedy.
Yes,
Gary
Kennedy. On the Shannon. Yeah, well,
Shannon.
Yeah.
And he has a holiday home not far from there, actually.
Look at that.
So sometimes we might see him in the supermarket or, you know.
Oh, right. Yeah, right. Yeah. There's a bit of gossip. There's a bit of gossip. Here's a bit of gossip back at you. We were down there years ago and we were on a boat and we were broadcasting from the boat and we got everybody, the total population of Gary Kennedy onto the boat. I think at the time it was 31.
No way.
We got them all onto the boat. That was a stunt.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, it's a long time ago now. Right, so Peter Kay tonight. And what about the Easter break, or have you got a break?
We are going away on Easter Sunday for a week holidays to Fuerteventura.
Ah, oh, nice.
Yeah, just a little. It's builders' holidays, and my husband is a builder.
Oh, do they get Easter? I didn't know that. They get,
yeah, oh, yeah. They're finished today, actually.
Right.
And they have tomorrow off, and then next week.
Okay, and you've been looking at the temperature, I'd imagine, on the app. So what's the temperature in Fuerteventura?
23, 24, I think. Yeah.
Nice.
It's fabulous, yeah.
Yeah. So that's, no wonder you're smiling. Peter Kay in Fuerteventura. Yeah. What a combination. Okay, you're up again.
It's also a little special occasion. It's my sister's 50th this week.
Oh, is it? Right, okay.
So herself and her husband are coming with us tonight. So,
right, yeah.
Marguerite.
And yeah. Will she be annoyed now that you've told the world that she's 50?
Yeah. She told everybody when I was.
Okay, right back at you, Marguerite. Okay, Des O'Sullivan, how are you doing, Des?
Not too bad, Ray. How are you doing?
Good. Say hello to Suzanne there.
Hi, Suzanne. Good luck. Best of luck.
Yeah.
And the same to you. Thank you very much.
You're in Athy in County Kildare, or you're on the way to Athy in County Kildare?
I'm on the way, driving back from work, Ray. Lovely day here. So I just pulled over near Kilcullen after I got the call to say I was on the quiz. So this made my day.
And are you travelling back from Dublin, Des?
Travelling back from Talla.
Talla.
So one of the work locations that we have is in Talla.
And what's that commute like? How long does that take you?
That's not too bad, actually. At the moment, the traffic wasn't too bad. So it's about 45 minutes. I suppose a tie's on the 9 now, so it makes it a much easier commute into Dublin.
Yeah.
As you can probably hear, I'm actually not a native Kildare man. I'm actually from Dublin, but I've been living in Kildare since 2000.
Oh, you don't have that lovely, glorious, flat Kildare accent.
I know. It's the vowels are like the landscape here, flat.
Anyway, I'd get in trouble here. You had a pedantic scientific thingamajig. We were saying, I heard it through the grapevine. No, you can't. Put us right.
Yeah, well, that one always puzzles me. I heard it through the grapevine. What does that mean? And a friend of mine used to grow raspberries in vines, and they're very narrow and tall. And he told me at that point that actually the way people used to communicate gossip or news when they were working in the vineyards was that they would talk through the grapevine to the other workers. So if you heard something through the grapevine, you'd hear it literally through the vines from the workers, and it would pass from one vine and one worker to another. So if you hear something through the grapevine, it means you heard it through gossip or heard it through word of mouth. There you go. Yeah.
I'll have to look that up now when I go home. But it sounds convincing. It sounds convincing.
It does, doesn't it?
There's
a kind of a sense of privacy when you're working in a vineyard, apparently. And so you can communicate one vine to the other, but everybody hears it.
It's like that, the old, you know, the can and the piece of string thing that we used to...
Exactly.
Maybe I'm a bit older than you. Okay.
Without the can and the piece of string.
Yeah. Right, it's Des again, Suzanne. Okay, good luck to you both. You know the deal. Three questions. I'll give you the category, then I ask you, do you want a clue or not? If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue and get it right, you get 2 points. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. And if it's drawn points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Okay, Suzanne, we start with music. Do you want a clue or not?
I don't want a clue.
You don't want a clue. Okay, so for two, who is this?
And he can see no reasons, because there are no reasons. What reason do you need to be sure?
It is the Boomtown Rats. I want to hear the rest of it, though. You don't mind, do you?
Okay, no problem.
I don't like Mondays.
Tell me why.
I don't like Mondays.
There you go. You're right, the Boomtown Rats. I don't like Mondays. 2 points for you. Now, Des... music for you too. What do you want to do?
I'll go Clueless, Ray.
You go Clueless,
maybe Clueless,
hey.
But I'll go Clueless. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So for 2 points, who's this?
A teenage dream's so hard to beat. Every time she walks down the street, another girl in the neighborhood. Wish she was mine, she looks so good.
Yeah, have it.
Say again.
That's The Undertones.
It is The Undertones.
Sharky.
Yes.
Teenage Kick.
Brilliant song. Perfect pop song. You get 2 points. Okay, great Irish music there. Or is he still going there? Question number two, Suzanne, it's even. Stephen, two all. Second one is TV hosts.
Sure, I'll go Clueless again.
Okay, right.
Clueless,
right. So TV hosts for 2 points. Who is this?
I have devoted all of my adult life, all of it, to pursuing this strange phantom intersection between smart and stupid. And there's a lot of people that believe the two cannot coexist. But God, I will tell you, it is something that I believe religiously. I think when smart and stupid come together, it's very difficult, but if you can make it happen, I think it's the most beautiful thing in the world.
Who's that?
I don't know.
No, no idea.
I don't know.
The clue would have been this red-haired American TV host took over from Jay Leno and is proud of his Irish heritage. Conan O'Brien. Conan O'Brien. Okay. Right. Des, chance for you to go in front. It's TV hosts. What do you want to do?
I might as well go with the clue this time, Ray.
Okay. Right. Here it is then. Point. Listen carefully. You can ask this red-haired Irish lady anything. For 1 point, who is this?
Bum jobs are all the rage, apparently, right. Which is basically, you know, yeah. Getting fat injected into your bum so it looks like, I like that action, it looks like Kim Kardashian obviously is in every newspaper and every website for whatever reason, but her bum seems to be a big part of her appeal and, and has kind of led to this trend of women wanting to have what I call a shelfers.
Right, who's that?
I can see her. I know she's in the television program Ask Me Anything.
Yeah.
But no. I cannot think of her name.
Okay. Angela Scanlon. Angela Scanlon. So the TV host got you both. So it's still even on 2-2. Right, it's down to the wire. Yeah, neck and neck. Irish Eurovision stars is the final category. Suzanne. Now, if you go for an old clue and get it right, you put Des under a good bit of pressure. What do you want to do? Irish Eurovision stars.
I'll go no clue.
No clue, okay. So, for 2 points, which Irish Eurovision star is this?
City sights, neon lights, grey skies are blue. All kinds of everything reminds me of you.
Who's that?
Dana.
It is Dana, yes. Well done. 2 points. You're on 4. You can't do any more. Thanks, Mr. Klaxon Man. Okay, it is nail biting. Des, you know what you have to do here.
Yeah, I do. Suzanne has thrown down the gauntlet.
She has.
Go clueless.
Go clueless. Eurovision Eurostars for 2 points. Who is this?
You know what I mean. Shake your feathers and pop your feet.
Okay, that's the unmistakable strains of Dustin the Turkey.
Yes, Douzepoint for you, Des. Well, actually, Dupont as opposed to Douzepoint. So that's four. Thank you. So that's 4-4. I enjoyed that. Unfortunately, it's down to a tiebreak situation. Yes, we asked you this question before you went on air. I'm going to repeat it now for our listeners at home. And whoever gets closer to the correct answer is today's winner. You're and on there, Des.
Yeah, I don't think I gave a great answer.
Okay, well, let's see how you did. Okay, according to Google Maps, how long would it take for you to cycle from Dolphins Barn in Dublin to Barna in Connemara? Lovely rhyme in there. Suzanne, what was your guess?
12 hours.
You said 12 hours. It's 222 kilometres. Des, what did you say?
Oh, I think I was in the 30s somewhere.
Yeah, you were.
I think it was 37. I was way off.
It's quite specific. 37 hours and 46 minutes.
the way I cycle, maybe it might take that long, but it wouldn't take the average cyclist. Yeah.
you sort of know already, but just the correct answer is 11 hours and 24 minutes. So, yeah, Whee! Suzanne. Yeah, Des.
Well done, Suzanne.
Des, lovely talking to you. Lovely talking to you, Des. We're going to send you out a Ray D'Arcy Show Keep Cup for your journeys from Tala to Athy. And safe home on the rest of your journey.
Thanks very much.
Right, Des, enjoy the break.
Thanks.
See
well
you now.
Suzanne,
bye. Suzanne, well done.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled.
It's Peter Kay, it's Fortaventura, it's Marguerite's 50th, and now it's a weekend away in the Crow Park Hotel.
My husband says.
What did he say?
Go on, Munster.
Go on, Munster. Right. Okay. That's Barry there in the background. Okay. Well enjoy that. Enjoy everything. And well done. And lovely talking to you, Suzanne. Safe up and enjoy the concert tonight. Bye now. Bye, bye, bye.
Thanks.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, I'm looking forward to talking to Danish Jamshed from our Cork studio in a moment. But first, a bit of Green Day. Danish Jamshed is in our Cork studio. Conas to talk to Danish.
Tommy Gahanawa, Tommy Gahundu Garfad, August Tufain.
Goramaga, thanks for asking.
Tuffled.
So you got up this morning and went into work. You never thought that you'd be on national radio by the end of your working day.
No.
Danish.
So, like, I didn't expect that. But I heard there was some news will be print, and I was expecting there would be very small news in some of the side of the paper corner and nobody looking into it.
Yeah.
But when I reached work and I see the paper, there's a big article on the paper. And I was being contacted from RT and...
Everybody wants to talk to you.
Was like there was since morning few interviews I've done, and I did the RT TV interview a while ago.
Oh, brilliant!
And now into the national radio.
Now in the radio, so Danish Jamshed, you're originally from where?
I'm originally from Pakistan. The city is Karachi.
Yeah.
It's a quite big city.
What's the population of Karachi about?
I guess now it's nearly 3 million.
Right. Okay. And you've been here in Ireland since when?
Since 2008, I came over to the County Clare, Shannon. And then 2009, I moved to the Cork.
Right. And why the Cork?
County Clare, Shannon was nice, but I'm from the big city, and I'm not used to the small towns. I would love to go to the big city. I moved to the Cork, which I loved it.
So Cork is calling. Now you work in Easons in Kent Railway Station in Cork.
Yeah.
August, you see, I better be careful here. I'll get it wrong. I'm looking for the verb here. I was going to say V, but then I was going to say beg, but I want the one in the middle, the present tense. Tá tú a kind of scalga, a lot.
Begun in Cobble Focal.
Yeah, and when did you start speaking Irish and why?
In my article as well, 2018 and 19, I was working on the shop. And I find out every Friday there's a bunch of kids coming. They're wearing a red dress and they, like, obviously they are coming to the station. They definitely come to the shop because they want sweets.
Yeah.
So they left their luggage in front of the shop and they're just talking. And I find out they're talking some different language and I was surprised. And when they came over to the counter and I asked, what language you speak? They said, this is Gaeltacht. And I said, Gaeltacht, you mean to say Irish? They said, yeah. And I said, okay, and where are you from? They said, we are from different part of the country, Mallow, Tipperary, Tralee. So we come to the Cork to study into the Gaeltacht.
Yeah.
And every weekend we are going back home. Since then, I was inspired with them and I'm asking them how to say hello in Gaelic, and they were start teaching me a little bit, and my main focus was on the pronunciation is most important. So the first word which was I was learning diguit.
Yes.
And the response back will be dismergut. It is kind of the blessings which we normally do as well in our country.
You speak Urdu.
We speak Urdu, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the blessing in Urdu?
We say Salamu Alaikum, and the response back is Wa Alaikum Salam, and the actual meaning of this, God bless you, and you are replying God bless you too.
And Dia Guit is God be with you.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Quite similar.
Quite similar. Yes, yeah, yeah. And then you set yourself a task of learning what a phrase each day, was it?
Yeah, I practice once I got some word and I practice all day with other customers, and and get the customer response as well.
Yeah.
And I find out really good response. And then, I'm working the train station to Irish Rail staff. And there's a good few taxi drivers there come to me and they're teaching me every day a few things. And I was practicing and applying onto the customers. And I got good and positive response.
Yeah, because there you are. You're obviously, you're from Pakistan there. They can hear your accent. And then you say, "Conas ta tu." And what reaction do you get then?
Like, first, when I say "Conas ta tu," and they look at me and they just surprised and they say, "Ta me guma." And when August the Fain, and when I respond back, "Ta me gahun tu garfaz."
Yeah.
Or Tommy, Tommy Guma, Tommy Kahanawa, or Tommy Arouse, something, Tommy Tershock.
Yeah.
So they're like shocked. And I said,
talk or serum.
Like, sometimes I feel like I am the good speaker because people don't much respond back. But sometimes I find out that some carry people and the front play people. I said, no, excuse me. I'm not that good.
Oh, yeah, because you can't understand the accent, is it?
Yeah, like fluent. I just learned Kubul Fukul Biganin.
Yeah.
And if I find out someone is fluent, so I certainly say I have to stop.
You know, I think that's the case with a lot of people in Ireland, Danish, and we were born here. So you've a daughter.
Yeah, recently, and I have a 4-month daughter.
Ah, brilliant! And are you planning to stay here? This is your country. Will be her country.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Great. And you're a polyglot because that's you know what a polyglot is. It means you're multilingual. You speak a lot of languages.
Sure.
Yeah. How many?
Kaved, a Hindu, three Kahar, more or less five languages.
Kahar, Kuik. What are they? Urdu, Gaelga.
Urdu and Indian, in Hindi, they're like speaking ways more or less similar.
Yeah.
And then Gaelic.
Yeah.
Then obviously English.
Yeah.
A little bit Polish.
Right.
Like, I can do basic conversation with Polish people, with the Spanish people.
Right.
A little bit French.
Right, wow.
And like one or two words in Chinese. I can say hello and thank you to them.
Amazing. Well, listen, Gurama good Danish.
Ta fault, Ray.
And we'll chat again at some stage. That's Danish Jamshed in our Cork studio. He's the star of the day. That's it from us. Cormac's on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3:00. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening. This one.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.